Today on Maine Calling, our personal tech gurus with holiday and everyday advice. Is there any technology on your wish list for Santa? We won't ask if you've been naughty or nice, but our guest today might have some advice about new tech products. One of them just installed a video doorbell. The other is thinking hard about technology and kids, how to monitor their usage and what's appropriate. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, Jared Maxfield and Janet McKenney are back to share their perspectives on emerging technology, protecting your privacy, caring for your home tech, and anything else you'd like to ask them within limits. From e-readers to smart speakers, laptops, robots, and more, what are your cyber questions? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The holidays fast approach. Tech gifts are popular and sometimes confusing, especially for the purchaser. Whatever your tech question, our tech team is with me to get answers for you. My guests, Janet McKenney, former director of library development at the Maine State Library, and Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology. We invite you to ask your questions, make suggestions, do everything except give our guests a hard time. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you, and nice to see your smiling faces. Let's start with something that may not on its surface seem like a technology topic, but it is. The word of the year, according to Webster, is brain rot, which, you know, you might argue that's two words, but still, brain rot. And Jared, this has a special resonance for you, right?
Sure, yeah. My brain
because
is rotting.
Because of what you're thinking about. Because of being a dad.
Being a dad. And even, honestly, myself and pretty much everyone I know. I mean, it's... And it's kind of appropriate that it's the word of the year, but brain rot is really referring to the term of how many of us get stuck, staring at our phones or tablets and just endlessly scrolling. And what seems like entertainment and, fulfillment and something to pass the time. The studies are coming out, and probably it's not much of a surprise to most people, but it's really not that great for us. It's actually affecting parts of our brain, and brain rot really talks about deterioration of your mental state. So it's not really the best thing for any of us. It's like anything, probably taken in moderation, but, I don't know about you, but I know that sometimes all of a sudden you look down and you've been scrolling on your phone for far longer than we planned on, and just watching those short videos, which are really not set up for any long-term attention. It's really feeding our addiction for short attention span. And as a father of a preteen, trying to now navigate the waters of technology and how she's able to access it and use it and time with it and time not with it. It's definitely it's concerning, because as us as adults, it definitely has an effect on our brains. But even more so with younger people and preteens and teens, because their brains are still developing, and this is what they're being exposed to, and this is the world that they're coming up into. It's the norm.
Yeah. Are you going to buy your preteen any tech presents?
Well,
Maybe
Well,
you
she's
can't
probably
say
in
because you're
school,
on
so
the
she's
air.
not. Yeah. No, she's like, I don't think she listens to a lot of NPR yet. So yeah, we are in the realm of getting the first smartphone addition to her life, which she has had an iPad for a few years, and really an iPhone is, in my opinion, just a giant iPad, but it does definitely open up some new almost dangers. I mean, that's the word. There's great things that can come from technology, and there's bad things that can come from technology. So I've definitely, over the last month, as we've considered this, been reading and learning a lot about protocols and safety measures and settings and third-party services and things that we can do that probably all parents should be involved with these days when it comes to their kids' technology, so that they can monitor them and have a say in what they do. It's not just as much as taking away a device, when you want or they shouldn't have it, but being able to know what they're doing on that device at all times, because it's the Wild West out there on the internet.
Janet, I know that when you hear the phrase brain rot, you think about it just a little differently.
Yeah, I became aware of it with something that I just discovered called PDF to brain rot. And it enables you to take a PDF that might be an essay or a book or a chapter of a textbook, and it turns it into a TikTok style like video. And it's an AI generated voice reading the text. But in the background of the video is either like a Minecraft video or, cats or something like that. And then some, music that doesn't really have lyrics or anything to do with it. And like ASMR clips or whatever. And supposedly, I'm looking at it, oh my, so much input coming in. You have like an audio, a video, and somebody reading text. And like that might blow my mind, but talk about reprogramming brains. But then the other argument was it was a helpful way to get students to study, that they thought it helped people with ADHD. So, I'm definitely on the fence. I haven't tried it myself. I have a feeling at my age, I'm not the prime audience for it. But I thought that was an interesting thing that they took the word brain rot and what we're talking about and trying to make it into a semi-educational tool.
Janet, I'm going to stay with you because among the things that are really hot right now and have been for a while, but there are so many more options than there used to be, are these doorbells that are also a camera. And I understand that you went down this path and installed one. Tell us about your journey. How did you decide to get one, and how did you figure out which one to buy?
Well, with traveling, coming up at the holidays, I was like, a video doorbell might be good. So I was investigating the Google one, and then of course the Ring Cam, which has, a large part of the market. But I read through a couple of articles that compared them, and I discovered one called the Arlo, which was a little bit cheaper than the other two and didn't require an ongoing subscription. You can subscribe to get enhanced things. So, my old lab was named Arlo, and I'm an Arlo Guthrie fan, so I was like, okay, let's try out the Arlo. So, the hardest thing about it was I have brick outside my house. And so taking the doorbell off and like the right size screws and getting it in there so it was in solid. So the actual physical installation was much harder than like the app. And it's working fantastic. And you can, share the app. You can add people in your family so they have access to it as well. So far, I'm really, super pleased with it. The neighbor's cat, came in at like 2:39 a.m. A little too close. The range doesn't go too far beyond our walkway, but Axl Rose was like walking by.
Axl
But for the
Rose
most
came to
part, it's
visit
been
Arlo,
great.
the doorbell.
Arlo the doorbell, captured Axl Rose walking at, after midnight. So pretty funny.
Only in 2024. And Jared, tell us about your experience with these video doorbells. You have them. Do you feel as though they were worth the investment?
Yeah, absolutely. I've had them for years. Technically, I don't have the doorbell per se. I do have a Ring product. Ring is the bigger company that you see. Arlo is also another good company. There's a few out there. But I have Ring spotlight cams. So basically, just like you'd have over your garage or back porch, just a motion detecting spotlight that would go off. These have the cameras built into them. They are hardwired, so they always have power and not to worry about changing out batteries and things like that. And they're good to have. I got to say, honestly, the first camera I got in my house is going to be almost a decade ago, and it was after we hear about it all the time, especially these days, but somebody got into my truck and took stuff out of my car in my own driveway. And the very next day I went out and got cameras. So having the security, peace of mind, at least being able to know what's going on is good. It's also can be fun just to see what's going on in your house. We were talking about it before the show, but honestly, what I catch most of the time around my house are going to be turkey and deer. So, if you have it set up on your phone, you usually get an alert. Something's been detected. And so you obviously want to see what it is. And a lot of times, it's just interesting to see what's going on. A couple of years ago, to be honest, I got a bill from a service person we had hired at the house. And it seemed a little excessive. And I went back and checked the camera, and they weren't there nearly the amount of time that they claimed to be. And so I was able to get that bill cut down quite a bit. So that was a little added bonus to help pay for the cameras themselves right there.
Well, I want to ask about gift ideas. Janet, you are a librarian, and I know that you have tried every e-reader that has ever come on the market. Do you have a current favorite?
Well, I have, a Kindle Paperwhite and, love like the weight of it. The new 2024 Kindles are were recommended by New York Times Wirecutter. And the new fancy dancy one is waterproof now, which I thought was pretty cool. So the regular Kindle is like $110, and the Kindle Paperwhite is like $135 and is waterproof now. Not that I'm reading in the tub, but if you read at the beach, things happen. So those are still the top picks. Kobo still has part of the market, and that was actually the very first ebook that our e-reader that I purchased, because I think at the time it was the only one where you could store PDFs on it. Now the technology, lets you go. And as far as the relationship to libraries, depending on where you live and what your library does, the statewide download library is Cloud Library. So you need a tablet, like either a Kindle Fire or an iPad or some other tablet to download the app. But a lot of libraries are getting into a service called Libby. And Libby allows, and I know there's at least like five libraries in the state. Libby allows you to use the Paperwhite and use the Cloud Library service as part of the download state library. So you can ask your librarian about that.
That's what I was going to say. It sounds as though if you're thinking about buying an e-reader, it's probably, and especially if you like to, you don't want to have to buy everything. You want to take some things out from your library. Maybe a good idea to visit the library or give them a call and ask them what they recommend for whatever they've got a contract with. Jared, I want to ask you about something that strikes me as really interesting, and this is the Meta Ray-Ban glasses. I remember when I you can correct me, but I think it was Google first even had prototypes for glasses that had cameras in them. And that was so controversial, and it was all over the headlines. And is this going to be an invasion of privacy? And now there's these glasses coming out that I never even knew about. And you know, I read the paper every day. I listen to NPR. It's gone from being something scandalous to something you can just buy for under $400.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think you're talking about Google Glass that came out years ago, and that kind of came and went. They were kind of large and cumbersome. I mean, that's how a lot of technology starts out, you know, large and cumbersome. And then that's, they work on it and it gets bigger or smaller and faster. The Ray-Ban glasses have actually been out, I think, for probably over a year now. and what they did was they, Meta, which is the Facebook company, they partnered up with Ray-Ban. So it's just a regular, you know, set of Ray-Ban style glasses like you would go to the store and buy anyway. Yep. But they put a camera into it. And you know, you mentioned privacy. A lot of the things we talk about in this show and we deal with it with technology, you know, it always comes down to privacy and the kind of the creepy factor. But, you know, honestly, I'm at the point, it doesn't matter where you go. You're on camera. You're being captured. We all walk around with computers and cameras in our pockets now anyway and pull them out. So, yeah, they're an interesting concept because they're a wearable. They look normal. I mean, unless you know what you're looking for, you might not even notice that there's a camera. It's built into the frame there. And I guess it can be a little creepy because you can walk around and talk to your glasses using the Meta AI. You can ask questions, something you're looking at, you can get information on, you can take pictures, you can take video. You know, it's, we've all been in a situation where, you know, you want to take a picture of something and pulling out your phone is either cumbersome or logistically doesn't make sense, or it's not as convenient as you want to be. Well, if you're wearing a pair of glasses, you can simply take the picture right there from your glasses. So you can listen to music. It's got built-in earphones. So, you know, it's kind of a one-stop shop for your camera, your audio, your glasses, everything built into a regular pair of Ray-Bans like you'd see if you went to the mall, into the store to buy a pair of glasses.
I feel as though this is, very, on one hand, very Jetsons. On the other hand, something that it may be very commonplace in the near future, I imagine an application like a parent may be, we mentioned the beach earlier, take the kids to the beach and grandma can look on her phone at the kids building a sandcastle at the beach or traveling somewhere and saying, what is that building? What is that bridge? And finding out right there and then what you're looking at. So Janet, you're nodding. I just can't imagine so many uses for something like this.
Yeah, I was thinking of travel and going someplace that you didn't know. And I'm a bit of an information junkie. The idea of having glasses and being able to ask, you know, what is that building? You know, what is this? Especially if you're in a foreign country or in a part of the United States that you don't know well. So that aspect of it really, you know, intrigues me. I have to find out. I think they do prescription ones because I, you know, I have like so many prescription and non-prescription sunglasses, you know, it sometimes gets a little crazy.
I hear you.
Yeah. And they're, yeah, they're also coming out with products like that. I saw some, I can't remember what it's called, but recently, but it's for people who are deaf or hearing impaired.
Yeah.
And it essentially, just like, again, we've talked about the creepy world of Alexa and things like that, where everything is listening to us. It now gives the ability, you know, with a reader or a pair of glasses or something on a screen, for essentially whatever audio is going on in the room to be instantly turned into essentially subtitles for people who are hearing impaired. So, you know, there's good uses to it as well. But if we went back 20 years and said that we're all have a walk around with a phone and a camera in our pocket, we would probably think that's pretty odd and pretty creepy. But as these things come out, they become more and more of the norm, especially, you know, as the younger generations come up. And this is, you know, we're moving into the world of the Jetsons, and we've got entire generations who are growing up only in the world of the generation, the Jetsons, the Generation Alpha, as they're called.
Well, we do need to take a break, and we can talk about philosophical technology issues, or we can answer your very mundane technology question on today's program. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or post a comment on Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking with Janet McKenney, former Director of Library Development for the Maine State Library, and Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology. Do you have any questions about your personal technology that's at home, or questions about holiday gifts that might require some tech expertise? You can share those comments and questions by email, talk@mainpublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. So before we go to audience questions, Jared, I do always want to ask you what you're seeing at the shop. What is the most common thing that people are bringing in, and how can you help people prevent that thing from happening to them?
You know, we always have the same things year after year: broken screens and liquid spills and things like that. We've talked over and over about the scams online. You know, one of the bigger things, actually, we probably start seeing in the last 6 months, is a notification hijack of the computer. And what I mean by that is, and we first saw it on Apple Macs tend to be a little more less susceptible to the traditional viruses and malware that we would get on PCs. But what they would do is, you know, if you think about it, a lot of times you go to a website and you'll get a little notification that will say, like, you know, do you want to opt in for notifications? So a website will send you an update or send you information. You get notifications from your computer about updates or security things. So all computers have a notification system. And what's been happening is there are websites that are essentially getting compromised or are fraudulent in the beginning. And a lot of times, I think, and these are things that we tend to honestly to opt in on our own. They're not viruses. They're not things that force their way onto the computer. Sometimes we get a little click happy and, you know, you might be offered from a website a notification. You click yes. And what these notifications are doing on, I saw them on Macs, and now we're seeing them a lot more on PCs, is they use the actual notification system from your computer. So it looks like a legitimate message, but really it's a fraudulent message. And it might say something like your McAfee is expired, you know, click here to renew, or you have a security update you need, click here to renew or update. And what that will do is, that message unto itself is benign. It's not actually hurting you, but it's the beginning of a scam path. And clicking on that will then usually bring you to a website. Oftentimes what these websites try to get you to do then is to call an 800 number. I can't preach enough. Don't call the number. You know, if you get a pop-up, if you go to a site that wants you to call an 800 number, try and go directly to that website, to that company, to that service, and contact them directly from the information on their website. Because what you do when you call the 800 number is you often end up with these scammers who then will purport to be whatever company. They'll say they're Microsoft. They'll say they're Apple. They'll say they're McAfee. And then they want to log into your computer. They want to essentially do a dog and pony show and show you all the things, quote unquote, wrong with your computer, and then offer to fix them for you after you pay them and hand over your credit card number information. So we are seeing a lot more of that scam. It's quite simple. Again, it's not, once it's on the machine, it should always be removed and cleaned off, but it's not a problem until we, the user, actually follow the path, call the number, and basically do what the scammers want. So it's really hard to tell people, because especially at the moment, they try and create a sense of urgency to kind of get you not thinking properly and to get you a little worried and to call the number. And then once you get someone, you think you have someone who's helping you, and they're really there to just completely scam you. And at the end of the day, get to your information and to your funds. So if you don't know what it is and you're not sure, with those types of scams, we are our own worst enemy. If we don't react to them, nothing bad will happen. So always just try to keep your radar up. And if it looks suspicious, it is suspicious and treated as such.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that about a sense of urgency, Jared, because I know friends who have been scammed over the phone, and it's the same thing. Creating a sense of urgency. In this case, it was something that had to do with Venmo. Someone was calling and saying, you need to fix this right away. And I think that's a really big red flag. I want to ask you, Janet, there's so many different kinds of scams out there, so many different ways that nefarious actors are trying to get to us. Is there sort of one general piece of advice you give people, especially people who don't consider themselves really tech savvy in terms of protecting themselves?
Yeah, I think I'd like to echo what Jared said is just don't click on everything, and be very aware because even in your email, and I think it's more so now with phones and text messages, I cannot tell you how many times I get something that says, the USPS post office can't deliver your important package because of XYZ. That's like delete it. UPS, the same thing. Your UPS account, you won't be able to receive. So it's kind of like the threats, or again, like the imminent warnings, like this bad thing will happen if you don't click now. And so, I always, and again, Jared's, gives great advice. If I get anything like that and I'm a little itchy about it, I get rid of the delete the message, and then I go to the website. I go to the postal service, or I look at USPS postal scams, or UPS postal scams, or FedEx scams, and you'd just be surprised at, how many there are out there. So it's don't click, go to the source website if you really are concerned that it might be something important. And I think that's the best thing to do.
And especially important this time of year when so many of us are mailing packages or having packages mailed for us, Jared.
That USPS one specifically, typically they found that when we're getting those, and I've gotten those myself, that is a big indication that your information has been compromised in some sort of data breach. They're very specific about that. So there are services you can use out there, built into Google, built into Safari. The bigger companies are essentially surfing the dark web, and oftentimes, for example, if you use Google Chrome and you save your passwords in there, which is there's pros and cons to that. That's a whole lot of discussion, but they have compromised password lists, and it's not a bad idea to look at on your Mac in Safari, or if you're using Chrome on a PC, and see in your settings under passwords if you have passwords that have been compromised, and if so, you should go directly to those websites and immediately change them.
So all you do is you go under Chrome and type in compromised password list, and it'll find it for you.
If you go under Chrome and your settings and autofill and passwords, and go into your password manager, they have at the top what's called a password checkup, and it'll go through and check your passwords and also let you know if they found any online that have been compromised. I've definitely found passwords online that have been compromised, and oftentimes it's when I from older sites. I mean, we've all created so many passwords over the years with sites you don't even remember, and then all of a sudden you find out that a password's been compromised, and once they get a password, the bad guys essentially they'll just ping site after site after site after site, seeing where did you use the same password. So trying not to use the same password. Two-factor authentication these days is super important. So if somebody, even if they get your password trying to access something, they would have to have access to your smart device as well. So you need a secondary form of authentication in order to be able to log in.
And explain briefly what two-password authentication is, Jared,
Well, it's
and why
basically
it's not
when
just
you
a
say,
pain.
well, it's all becoming a pain, but it's just so if I were to get Janet's password and try to log into her bank account, it would with just her password, it would then it's send a code to her cell phone. Say, are you trying to log in? And you have to confirm that. So it's a second level of authentication. So,
Gotcha. We've all had that happen. We're going to go to Kitsy, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Kitsy.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm interested with the brain rot. I'm in my 87th year, and I'm still working a very part time as a retired minister, serving a congregation once a month. And I decided that I am a kind of person who is so easily overwhelmed. And I could see that the internet would lead me down a path of incredible overwhelm. And I can't speak for anybody else. I'm speaking for myself. And so 3 years ago, I completely severed all connections with internet. I have a landline phone and I have the U.S. Postal Service. And I know I miss out on some things. I don't get to do, you know, big family Zooms. But then I call each member of the family and have a nice conversation, which I would not have been able to have if we were all trying to get our little 2 cents in a big Zoom call with 7 people. So I just and I know I missed some stuff, but this is the other part of it. Maine Public is my savior. And it has been, and I've said this a gazillion times, I'm leaving some in my estate to Maine Public. Maine Public Radio, this program, I never miss unless I have something absolutely essential to do. Thank you for Maine Public, because you have been the best quality substitute for being online.
Oh, Kitsy, thank you. Our pleasure. Thank you so much. Janet, Kitsy's not going to have brain rot.
No, she definitely isn't. Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times you can do so much with the telephone and, you know, with a landline. And part of it is time. You know, we tend to live in a society where we want to accomplish everything quickly, and technology allows that. But like, I immediately went to, you know, she's 81, so Medicare is something. And I know I have to do 2-step authentication with Medicare, but she can also call them on the phone and accomplish, you know, the same things. But, you know, it's not as easy. And, you know, a lot does have to do with your personality. And so it sounds like she knows herself well enough that she didn't want to go down that whirlpool, you know. So, you know, kudos to her.
Kitsy, thank you. And Janet, I'll add that if you're somebody who only needs to go online every once in a while, there's always the library, right?
Yes, definitely. You can go and use the library's computer and get some help.
We'll go to Hollis and Patrick. Hi, Patrick. Go ahead.
Hi, I manage a community media station, and over the years, I've been frustrated by storage devices, whether it's a 16 gig or 128 gig, a thumb drive, or a 5 terabyte storage device. Initially, they work fine, and you can access whatever you've stored on them, but over time, they stop getting read by computers, and I was just wondering if your panelists could weigh in on that.
Oh, that's a really good thought. yeah, like everything else, things get antiquated.
Well, they all work until they don't. Any storage device, external hard drives, big ones, small ones, I have a very simple message. You don't trust any of them. Nothing important should ever be stored on just one device. You need to have everything in 2 different places. With external hard drives, it's not a question of if they're going to fail. It's just a question of when they're going to fail. I can open up one brand new out of the box and it could fail 5 days later. It could still be running 10 years later. You just don't know. The smaller thumb drives that we deal with, you know, I usually recommend that people don't use those as your long-term backup storage devices. Those are usually going to be cheaper components. Those are more meant for temporary storage, transferring from machine to machine. And the flip side of that, he had mentioned, like, you know, you can get these giant hard drives now, 5 terabytes and larger. Those in my store, I actually see those come in sooner than later, more often than like the smaller 1 or 2 terabyte kind of simpler ones, and they failed. You also tend to find that people that use that much storage, photographers or people that deal with larger images or video files, things like that. They're doing a lot of large transfers, and those transfers are basically working the drive. So at the end of the day, never trust any one device to hold your stuff. People will want to free up space on their computer, and then so they'll move their pictures off the computer onto a hard drive, and they'll say, "Well, I was backed up," but they then deleted it from their computer to free up space. You're not backed up. Anything backed up should be in two places, and if it's uber important, keep it in three.
Patrick, thanks for that question. A good one. I'm going to go to one really quick question, I hope, before our break. An email from Donna. Do those still using Microsoft 10 need to pay to upgrade to Microsoft 11? No,
No.
Janet? No? Okay. No. That is a quick
No, but
question.
you have to, there is a tool built in that will tell you if your computer can go to 11. Not every machine can go to 11.
All right. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can find us on email, or you can email us on at talk@mainpublic.org or post to Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, answers to your personal technology questions. Joining me, Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology, and Janet McKenney, former director of library development with the Maine State Library. If you're quick, you can join the conversation. The phone number 1-800-399-3566, our email address talk@mainpublic.org. We'll go to an email from Terry. I admit it. My computer is old and so am I, 88. I use my computer every day, except when it fetches up and frustrates me to no end. If I turn it off or it updates and shuts off, when I turn it on again, I get a message something like this: searching for media, no media found. This is on a totally black screen and I can do nothing except turn the thing off and then on again and then off and so on. Finally, I unplug it, wait a couple hours, and go through the on-off routine again until I see the blue HP insignia. Any suggestions? So, Terry, good for you. All the IT folks I know say the first thing to do is turn it off and turn it back on. So you could sign up for that job. Jared, anything you want to add to Terry's frustration and maybe a tip that won't take so long?
Sounds like a hard drive could be starting to fail. If you're booting it, and sometimes it boots, and then another time it doesn't boot, and you get something like no media found or not detected, that's typically a sign that the hard drive itself, the physical hard drive inside the machine, is starting to fail. A lot of times computer components don't just die, they like start to fail, work, don't work. It's a downward spiral. It's probably not going to get better, and unfortunately, it'll probably get to a point where it just he only gets that message and it does not boot. So if you're seeing that, I would definitely make sure all of your data is backed up so that if something happens.
Yeah, and so if this is happening to Terry or anybody else listening, and they've been thinking about getting a new computer anyway, would you recommend they do so before it out and out dies? Is it easier to transfer the information? Or, and Janet, yes, you're nodding.
Yes, always. I always used to kind of fight with the libraries about how often they should replace their computers. And public computers in a library get a lot of use, but the way technology is moving, anyone who gets like 5 to 6 years out of a computer, and I will be telling you right now, I am on a 2018 Mac Air, and it's making me very, very nervous because for me, that's like the oldest computer I've had in a really long time. And so if it's something that she uses every day, she really has to look at probably getting a new computer. And even like a new refurbished computer, would be helpful, depending on, costs and whatever. For people with lower incomes, Maine has a great organization called Give IT, Get IT, and they offer low-cost refurbished computers if you meet certain income levels. And so that's a good way to get a really solid machine that somebody's updated and taken care of if you're afraid to or can't afford a brand new one.
Great tip. Thank you, Janet. We're going to go to Catherine calling from Topsom. Hi, Catherine, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I am legally blind. I'm also a senior citizen, so I struggle. My question is about two-factor authentication. More and more, if I reach a website that I want to get information from or something, they ask me not only to give them a password, but also give them my cell phone number so that they can send me a string of numbers. And I do have a cell phone, but it's a French cell phone made for people who are blind. And I prefer to use it only for outgoing calls. Why can't these websites give one the alternative of using a landline or an email in order to get this code?
Catherine, you know, that's a really good question, and I'm going to turn to Jared. I know that some do, but not all. Jared, do you have some thoughts?
Some do. Yeah, some do. I mean, it's really just how that particular website sets it up. A lot of times verifications come through to, I mean, typically the easiest way is for most folks is going to be a text to a cell phone, because that's what they always have in their pocket. Email is often a secondary way, and some companies even will use a landline that will call and then give you an audio, like a recording with that code or something that you need to verify. So it really just comes down to the website themselves and the type of technology that they tend to use. And, you know, one quick thought on that is people come in all the time. And it's hard to remember, but, you know, people have these, you know, our old accounts, like a main.rr or a Roadrunner account or something like that. And their password's been saved in their device forever. And they go get a new device, and they don't have the password. And when they go to reset it, their secondary form of authentication might be an old cell phone number or an old email. And so that really puts people in a bind because they don't have that second form of authentication to be able to use to then be able to change their password, and oftentimes get locked out or potentially even have to abandon an account. So anytime you update, or change your cell phone or an email, it's hard to remember, but you need to go through and think about where those pieces of information have been used as your second form of security, because without those being updated before you lose the ability to, that can really cause a big problem for people.
And I'm thinking about Catherine, I'm thinking, I know you can't choose everything you use, but if I'm you, I use, for example, a bank that will work with me, and I will not give my business to someone who makes it impossible for people who are blind or sight impaired to work with them. I mean, this is a huge number of Americans, and I don't know, I'm preaching now, but they ought to be willing to work with you, Janet.
Yeah, I was thinking if you can somehow get the customer service telephone number, you know, and you could probably use Google, DuckDuckGo, or, you know, a search engine to get that and call them and say that you can't do authentication text on the phone. And why isn't there, or is there one that they're just not advertising? Because part of it is building awareness of, you know, how they are leaving people out. And, you know, I just want to do a plug for the Maine Talking Books program for books for people who are blind or have trouble reading books. It's a great service. And, you know, if she's not taking part in that, to contact the Maine State Library.
Catherine, thank you so much for calling. We'll go to Jack, who's calling from Sanford. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing? I'm Jack. I'm 27 from Sanford, Maine. I just had a question about the quantum computing chip that Google just made. And there's been all sorts of stuff coming out about how it could prove things with the multiverse and that we're living in multiple realities and all sorts of just crazy, way over my head type stuff. So I just wanted to hear your guys' comments on that. And just want to shout out Man Public too. Mublik, I love you guys. Hell yeah.
Oh, thank you so much, Jack. And Jared, what are your thoughts on the quantum chip thing that Google has created?
I don't know. Maybe Jack's right. I mean, maybe there's a Janet and a Jared and another version of another universe doing a show with Jennifer right now. I mean, quantum computing is really the next level of computing. And at a very basic level, what it is, you know, all of our phones and computers have processors in it, and it takes a certain amount of time and energy to do calculations. Quantum computing, I can't remember, but what he was referring to, Google just had something. And I could be wrong on this, but it's like it did a calculation in 5 minutes or 5 hours, yep, or something like that, that would have taken traditionally, you know, X million years or something like that. So it's just the next level of computing. And Google did essentially say something. I read what he read, that in order to do the calculations, perhaps the science behind it is actually tapping into, because it essentially, part of it defies the laws of physics as we know them, could be tapping into another universe to help solve these things. So I don't know. Quantum computing, it's hard to, we're just fixing regular computers here. We haven't gotten to quantum computers yet, but it is supposed to be the wave of the future. And when they do crack it, it is really going to change our world in a dramatic way, in ways we can't even imagine.
Jack, thanks so much for your call. I'm going to go to one that's less philosophical. This is an email from Merle. What is the best way to wipe old computers and hard drives and thumb drives? Janet.
Oh, geez. I usually, you know, follow the procedure, you know, on my Mac, you know, there's a procedure that you can do, you know, especially if you're going to, you know, switch over or donate your computer, you know, to something. So following the instructions by the vendor, you know, or the company that has done it. And then, you know, I'm sure if you're unsure about it, you know, I'm sure Jared at his workplace have a special way, you know, to do it. But I've always just followed the instructions given to me. You know, I like instructions, you know. I feel certain when I following instructions, but I'm not sure what Jared can say.
Well, the easiest way is a good old fashioned hammer or a drill. So most drives can be physically destroyed. The big question just comes down to if they work or not, you know. So if they don't work, you know, if they don't respond, then a physical destruction is usually the best way. If they do respond, like Janet said, you can wipe them or format them. Technically, if you want the ultimate level, they do what they call like a DOD or Department of Defense wipe, which is having a drive formatted essentially seven or more times to overwrite it. Because technically, even when you overwrite a drive, you know, just think of layers. There's still a layer below where your data can still exist. And if someone really wanted to go after it, they can. So that's why multiple formats of the drive, just push it down and get it to a level where it can't be.
We'll go to Joanne calling from Naples.
Bashing it with a hammer is also cathartic.
Joanne, we're almost out of time, so if you could be quick, that'd be great.
Yes, I'd like to put in a plug for AARP Maine. They have an excellent fraud podcast every month, free. You don't have to be a member. It's the second Tuesday of the month from 10 to 10:30. You can register on their website. They send you the Zoom link and also a reminder. I went ahead and unfortunately got caught in the dark web, and I do all the two-step verification and everything, and so anyone can get caught. I do want to mention quickly that I purchased a home security system, one of those do-it-yourself kind of things, and was trying to cut back on the premium membership. I did not have the customer service number. I went into Google. They had a logo of the company and a very valid 800 number. I called it. I got a fellow from Pakistan who told me I had to pay $190 to break a contract early. There was no contract. I then went back onto Google, found another 800 number, different knockoff logo, but looked legit. And that was also a guy from Pakistan. So I ended up working with security and fraud for the company that I purchased. And they said this is happening a lot.
Mm. So good warning, Janet. You're nodding.
Yeah, we sometimes forget, and I know Jared has said this before, but your first results in Google are popular ones, and popular ones can be fraudulent. So, it's bringing a lot of discernment to, what it is that you're, looking for. And yeah, it's always good to go to the original source. So, not Googling, I want the 800 number four, but the name of the company, and go past all the ads and past all the sponsored stuff to get to the actual company.
Thank you, Joanne, for the question, and thank you to both of us. Great hour, Janet McKenney, former director of library development with the Maine State Library, and Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology. Today's sound engineer, Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. If you haven't subscribed to our newsletter yet, do so. You just go to mainecalling.org and sign up. It's free. Tomorrow on the program, Maine's Winter Farmers Markets. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.